Hi, and welcome to From Many People's Strength, the podcast that covers Saskatchewan politics and current events. My name is Corey Johnson, and my pronouns are he and him.
My name is David Richards, and my pronouns are he and him, or they and them.
Okay, so we got some headlines. All right, we will start with Saskatchewan woman found frozen to death, which is quite sad. She was released from a correctional center 3 days before she was found. Kimberly Squirrel was a mother of six who struggled with addiction and mental health. And she was found in a residential area of Saskatoon that on January 23rd. She had been released from the Pine Grove Correctional Center near PA, about 160 kilometers northeast of the city.
So much wrong with what happened. One of the things in the article they talk about is this is like this specific death is a that problems with the facility are not one-off. That this is not an isolated incident. That it's reaching the extreme of death is not a common occurrence. But other circumstances around how things are dealt with is
It's the family was really frustrated because they weren't informed, even that she had been when I read this, I think there's a new article, but in this one, they mentioned that they hadn't even known she was being held, which is really odd to me. Like, you'd think somebody would know.
And there's definitely issues around privacy. But there needs to be more supports for a transition. Like, again, we've talked about this so many times. I think the state incarcerating someone, like the state confining someone, the state inflicting violence upon someone, because holding someone against their will is violence. The state committing violence against someone should have an incredibly high threshold on when that happens. Even if something does meet that threshold, it then, like, the downside for the state for doing that is you then are responsible for someone. Like, if you are taking someone into custody, you become responsible for them, and that includes the transition afterwards.
Right, yeah. Like, the idea that you would just let somebody out and they don't have a ride, they don't have a place that you know of to go – like, it seems like a failure pretty deeply, right?
And they talk about there's only one women's facility in the province, which means when they're being released, it could be any distance from a person's home. I don't know how far it is in this case, but, like, the province is big.
Silly. This is, like, ridiculous. How can there be one only? And then you don't even take care of people when they're trying to get places.
And again, it comes down to what's the purpose of incarceration? Is it rehabilitation? Is it trying to protect someone from the person who you're incarcerating, or is it really just vengeance and punishment? Because if it's either of those first two, what we're doing isn't working, right? We do not have a rehabilitative system. We set people up for failure once they enter the prison system. And as far as if someone is a threat or is a danger, locking them up for a number of years and then releasing them at the end of that chunk of time, if they are a danger, all that does is delay the danger. Like that doesn't, right. And I'm not advocating like every sentence gets life imprisonment, obviously, but like right. If all you're doing is lock someone up for X amount of time and then release them, you've now taken someone away from their supports. You have put them in a violent environment. You have, put them in a situation where like, they are, if anything, they are more likely to become violent upon getting out. But even if not, even if it's just a flat, again, all you've done is delay things. So now 3 years later, they're the exact same person they were 3 years earlier because you're not putting supports in place to help with healing and rehabilitation. Yeah. And again, that just comes down to punishment and vengeance. And everyone says that's not the reason. Like, I think we could at least have an honest conversation. If someone says, no, I think someone who takes drugs deserves to be punished because I hate them. Or if someone is doing sex work, or if someone is, committing other crimes, like whatever crime, and I don't know what crimes were committed in this specific case. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. So I'd be clear that me giving a couple examples is not in any way, shape, or form speaking of this specific person. Right. But again, it just comes down to like, if someone really thinks, someone who does those things deserves punishment, just come out and say it and be honest. And I can go, hey, you're a shitty person. And like, I'm allowed to think that about someone, and people are allowed to think that about me. If people hear me say, I don't think we should punish people, I think punishment is bad, they can say, oh, he's a hippy dippy leftist liberal latte
bleeding
sipping
heart liberal.
Bleeding heart, right? We're allowed to form opinions based on what people's positions are on things, but at least be honest about what your position is. Yeah. Don't try and say, oh, I'm worried about keeping people safe, or I'm worried about helping people become rehabilitated, when that's obviously not what you're interested in.
Yep. Exactly.
So, but hopefully we do see some changes. I'm not super optimistic based on the political climate that currently exists, but whenever I read these stories, I do try and focus on the fact that there are people doing good work out there. I think this is a good opportunity to support those who are doing the work of trying to get prison reform. So,
bill to relax criminal penalties will make change in First Nations people's lives, says Saskatchewan chief. Liberals say mandatory minimum penalties disproportionately harm Indigenous black offenders.
Yeah.
And, yep, I mean, this is absolutely...
The data supports that.
Yep. And I'm happy to hear that they're going to be relaxing penalties for drug offenses. This is... a good story, actually.
Yeah.
Repealing mandatory minimums. Mandatory minimums are one of the banes of criminal justice. It's just awful. You take away the judgment from the judge, which is their job, applying context to the situation. So...
Yep. No, agreed. I don't know. Yeah. What more to agree with you on, or how to more clearly agree with you on that? It's pretty obvious, that this is something that disproportionately impacts Black and Indigenous people. And even if it didn't, like so many times we discuss policing or the justice system, there's the two issues that really, really heavily overlap, intersect, right, if you will.
We can't use that word.
So heavily overlap, but they're separate, right? We have issues with the fact that there is systemic racism built into the system we have. It disproportionately has negative impacts on Black, Indigenous people of color. And you have, in addition to that, a system that over-incarcerates in general, that is overly militarized police forces, is a justice system, again, like I was saying moments ago, that a justice system that focuses on punishment, rather than, rehabilitation or healing, right? So those two issues overlap. And it's one of those things where I always find it ridiculous when the counter argument of systemic racism within the justice system almost always supports the fact that the other half of that is problematic as well. It's always, well, white people get unjustly murdered by police too sometimes. Like, that's not also the slam dunk defense you think it is, right? Like, white people are also hurt isn't good either. I also don't want white people going to jail for nonviolent crimes, even like when violent crimes becomes its own issue. I think, again, we want to keep people safe, but again, even to the most limited degree there, I think there's other ways of ensuring future safety. But again, like, I also don't want people who aren't black or indigenous being subject to minimum sentencing and over policing and violence by the state upon a person. Right. So,
it's funny. It makes me think of the people who, whenever there's an instance of a white person facing police brutality, rather than making it an issue about police brutality, they go, well, where are all the social justice warriors complaining about this?
Like we're still there. Black Lives Matter actively fights against when white people are killed by police as well. Like, even though that's not their mandate. And I think I one of the things, I remember very, I have seen this happen a lot within Saskatchewan in the last couple of years, and this is, again, one of those positive things that I'm really happy about. In the last couple of years, every time there's a Black Lives Matter rally or missing and murdered Indigenous women's protest or and then something about Indigenous civil rights comes up, there are always people from the other community. So if it's at a Black Lives Matter protest, there are always Indigenous women and Indigenous elders there going, they stand up for us when we are hurting. They come to our rallies. It's our job to continue to stand in solidarity and not speak over them, but support them. And the exact same thing happens the other way around. I've been at, rallies and protests, around, justice for our stolen children or missing and murdered Indigenous women. And there are people from the Black community in the province who are there saying, hey, they came out to our Black Lives Rally, movement. They're always there to support us. Again, it's not our job to speak over it. It's not our job to speak for, but it is our solidarity to stand with them. And Jesus fucking Christ, if white people could just do the same damn thing for both communities as well. And some do, and that's great when it happens. Sad that I have to put that caveat in there. But I think, again, if you were angry about cops killing white people, then even if you don't think it's a racialized issue, which, again, I can't imagine how you can see the data and not come to that without it being racist. But even if you don't, even if you don't, fucking like find that common ground at least, right? Yeah. You do have the one common thing of, hey, we both don't want overreach by the state. We all both don't want, police violence against the citizenry. So.
I suppose it's a little bit, it's tangentially related, but it's similar to like the anti-maskers are mad at the police right now.
Yeah.
And they're getting fines and whatnot. But if you ask them to support a Black Lives Matter protest or whatnot, they would absolutely, completely not. Right. Like, yeah, we're all against the police for some reason, but.
Yeah.
But those black people, they're wrong. And those people, those of us with the masks are right somehow.
The flip side is I struggle with that in the reverse, right? I do struggle with that on the other direction where when anti-maskers are getting fines, me going, okay, where is that line? Because like, I also don't want over policing. So again, do I want violence against someone. Fines, I think, probably are a non-violent way of dealing with things. But again, like it's still an issue that you need to look at. Where do we want police to go? Yeah. And again, this is, I think we've talked about this before, and it's not within the purview of Saskatchewan, but after the Capitol attacks in the States, hearing people who claim to be on the left and claim to be for social justice and limitations on police, who are now all of a sudden talking about how great no-fly lists are. I'm like, no, this thing has been shitty and tyrannical and authoritarian for 20 years. It doesn't stop being authoritarian just because, you know, the broken clock is right twice a day. The exactly. clock is still broken. Getting a little off topic, and I apologize for that. But again, I think this is an overall good news story. We both, I think, agree minimum sentencing is dangerous and inappropriate and contrary to the ideas of a just justice system. So,
yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah. All right. So this isn't, there's not much to this. Provincial Archives completes a 2-year move to a new centralized location. This is just, they just took an old CBC building and, moved a bunch of archives into it, which is, I thought it was interesting on some level because it's just good to have records of things and keep them.
Mm-hmm. Like so many things, there's the cost savings of centralization has cost, has costs on the other side because, folks in Saskatoon are expressing concerns about how it is now costly to access information from Regina. So the long-term costs may outweigh the long-term savings. Centralization is always an issue.
Right.
And again, it's that this is maybe where I am agreeing with the Sask party or their bureaucrats. But it's always that thing where conservatives, and we talk again, broken record, but conservatives at the provincial level never want centralization when it's done at a federal level, but always want centralization when it's done at a provincial level.
Right.
Right. The philosophy sort of, it's not actually a coherent, cohesive philosophy. It's a, no, we just want the power. We want you to decentralize it down to the provincial level, but centralize it up from the local level.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but I think all in this case, it does make sense. There's some cost savings there. I do understand the downside of researchers from Saskatoon having to drive to Regina. And, you know, if it was the other way around, you know, that's an issue there as well, but.
It's like you say, it's just, that's one of those issues that, if you have a centralized location where all the archives are, that's just going to be something that happens.
Yep. I'd rather people from Saskatoon have to make a couple hours of driving rather than documentation get lost because it's spread out and there's inconsistent, there's this inconsistent maintenance of it. So,
yeah.
We got, next story I think we're going to touch on is fine fighting.
Yes, that's right. Which I guess it's kind of works into the other stories a little bit. We were talking about fines being, you know, one of the ways that people get fines for not wearing masks or for protests or whatnot.
Yeah.
And, but this venue, Saskatoon's Buds on Broadway, got a $14,000 fine for not following restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we also talked about Mr. D's last week. So this is... the week before.
Stats happened as well with the Stats Cocktails and Dreams had their issues.
Yeah.
This one doesn't seem, and again, I don't know. The news article didn't talk about any sort of neon signs pointing at themselves. Like we had the issue previously where it was a bar, like again, putting up that flashing neon sign saying fine us by, tweeting out, we respect your right not to wear a mask. If you fight the man fights back.
generally.
Right. So, this one, we'll see what happens on it. I think if I was the person in charge of this stuff, probably what I would do is quietly talk to the establishment and go, all right, look, we needed to, we're willing to work with you. We can waive some of or all of the fine. Here are the steps you need to do to make sure things are safe. Here is the public service announcements you need to participate in. Like here, like again, the corporate equivalent of putting in community service that often gets a bad rap when done at the federal level. But I think when you are dealing with it at the local level, I'm a little softer on small businesses than I am on giant corporations. Giant corporations getting the slap on the wrist and being told, okay, just don't do it again. I'm a little less on board with. Even sometimes then it works out as the right, you know, the right option. But especially when it is a small business, you know, where
like their statement says, regarding news reports of recent fines at Buds on Broadway, owners and management would like to assure all patrons that we are following and complying with all COVID-19 regulations. Regarding the fine, we were unfairly cited for spacing regulations within the establishment. So, I mean, they seem to feel that they were following the guidelines. I guess that you can work with them on that.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And like, Buds on Broadway is not SNC-Lavalin, right? Like this is not, this isn't a case where, you know, where a company breaks the law and now we're just trying to, you know, soften things in order to hit the economy less badly. It's, you know, it's a longstanding small business in the city. Again, I don't know the background of this because if it turns out, they were given four warnings and on the fifth time, the police finally had to step in. That's a little different. But hopefully this doesn't turn into, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of legal costs on both sides because it gets fought in the courts and that they can come to some sort of solution. And hopefully businesses start just erring on the side of caution and complying with the law.
Right.
Like that's the best outcome as well. Where if businesses can be, cautious on this because we all want things opened up again. I don't think anyone wants this to go on. And I don't know if we talk about it specific, but the projections for what could happen with this variant strain, the VOC strain, the variant of concern strain of COVID, that sort of rocketing up of the chart at the end. If we don't strictify things up, is frightening. Yeah. And if we can start preventing that, that would be great.
I mean, it's just a tweet, but it's from a doctor here in the province, but he was comparing stats from Regina and Saskatoon and how Saskatoon has actually been on a pretty good downward trend for the most part. But Regina, we had a little bit of a downtrend and then a spike up and then down. Yeah. So it seems like maybe Saskatoon is following the guidelines a little bit better than we are here, but
the analogy I've been hearing, I don't think I've talked about it on this podcast yet, but I think I've been hearing it since I don't know, probably last summer. It's the idea when the doctor prescribes you antibiotics, don't stop taking them just because you're feeling better.
Right.
Like that. Anytime, I don't know about you, my doctor is very adamant about that. Every time I've gotten antibiotics for anything, it's like, no, this, you will take this for 10 days. If you're feeling great on day four, you're still taking them for 10 days.
Yep.
And I think it's the same with this stuff, right? It's like, if we start to see that downward curve or the flattening of the curve or even reduction, like, let's get it completely under control before we stop taking our antibiotics, before we stop paying attention to these measures. So
if the numbers start going down, don't just start going out willy-nilly all the time.
and same with the vaccinations, right? Now that vaccinations are starting up, and I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more as well, I think. But if not today, then on future podcasts. But until this is dealt with, we can't just assume that vaccinations are going to solve the problem. Because I this is where the science, is something I need to look into more. But my understanding is, as with any other vaccination, a vaccine doesn't help you once you have it. A vaccine is preventative. So if the problem's already in full swing, the vaccine isn't going to be the solution. It's going to prevent future cases, but not people who already have it. So,
yeah, exactly. Okay. I guess before we get into our longer segments, I just want to mention our friend, HomefireSK on Twitter, has been following, she does the True North Radio YouTube channel and podcast. And, she's been talking about Corey Cardinal. He's in solitary confinement right now. And, I mean, I think we both agree that solitary confinement isn't cool. That's kind of a torture. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's torture. I don't know the motivation for it. I don't know why he's in there, but the assumption seems to be that he is in there for so that he can't communicate with the outside. And it's hard to say for sure. I mean, obviously the government is never going to say that that's the reason. So,
right. Well, and that wouldn't be I that wouldn't even be the government. That would be, I guess it's still the government, but it's
the guards or
the prison authorities the prison themselves. Itself, yeah.
But it's hard to say exactly what, but yeah, I thought it was worth noting because it's, I don't know. I don't think people should be in solitary confinement, and it's been multiple days. So
why are we doing this? Like, you need to start going back to first principles of why do we have a carceral justice system in the first place? And if you're not being true to your first principles, you need to reevaluate how you're implementing things. Or be honest that your principles aren't actually what you say they are.
Right, right.
So.
Community stakeholders wrestle with pushback against rural treatment center. So in Fort Sam, Saskatchewan, there are some people pushing back against the idea of a treatment facility coming to town, despite a local property owner's desire to lease a piece of land to the center. Indian Heads Pine Lodge Treatment Center was devastated by a fire at the end of last year, and James Archer wants to lease the land he owns, which was a Prairie Christian Training Center, to house the new Pine Lodge. It's a drug rehab center, right?
Yep.
And this is very much
NIMBY. It's an NIMBY. It's not in my backyard. A
bunch of people don't want drug users being treated in their neighborhood, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess the reason I wanted to spend a little bit of extra time on this is just because, I mean, we have talked about drug addiction in previous stories and stuff. And I think we keep coming back to this idea that people who use drugs are human beings who deserve dignity, and they deserve to have access to treatment. And as long as this treatment center isn't available, then that's fewer people that can be helped. And you would think that if people cared about their community, they would be in favor of having some place where people can go to get help.
Yep.
End thought, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when you have things that are NIMBY, no one will admit. Again, this is a thing where just like admit that you don't want it. And it's, you have all of these people, because I think they're aware that their opinion is shitty, that it's selfish at least, right?
Like
I think there's sort of a recognition, okay, no, this is good work. This is work that needs to be done, but I still don't want it to happen nearby. Yeah. So all of the people who are sort of fighting against it are coming up with sort of, oh, well, this doesn't align with the zoning, and it's like all of these weird bureaucratic reasons for why it shouldn't go through. And like on so many things like this, where it's the technicalities that come out, I just like, do you realize we can see that you don't do this any other time, right? Like any other time there is a zoning issue or land being rezoned. You know, oh, this was supposed to be a parking lot and now it's going to be a strip mall, or this was supposed to be a laundromat and now it's a restaurant. And
yeah. the zoning is slightly. Why can't we have a bar in our neighborhood?
Right? Like, those typically, like, no, it's, yeah. And the other part of it is, again, it's like, you're not going to know. Like, once it's there, it probably will have zero impact on the lives of anyone who's there. It's not like, I also think safe injection sites and things like that are also incredibly useful and important, and we need to have them. But that's not even what this is. Right. This is rehabilitation. So this is people who won't have drugs. Quite frankly, how many people – I think I saw 43 is the number of people they're hoping to have in it.
Accommodate 43 people.
Yeah. So the 43 – if you take the 43 people who are going to be in that facility for the time that they are there and compare it to a random sampling of 43 people from any city or town or village in this entire province – the level of drug use amongst the 43 people in that rehab facility is going to be lower than a random sampling of 43 people from anywhere else in this province.
Absolutely.
You take 43 people from Fort Sand, just the regular, any person, random choice, and you are more likely to have found people who have done drugs in the previous, whatever range of day you want to pick, than the people who are in the facility. Because that's the whole reason for them being there, is healing. Yeah.
They're there to detox and get off of drugs.
And yes, I'm sure there are probably times where I'm not naive enough to think drugs never get snuck in and there's never issues, or there's, I'm not saying, you know, you will never find someone, you know, checking themselves out, in ways they shouldn't be. But it's a healing center. Like, it is the equivalent of any other medical facility.
9 out of 10 times, you're not going to have, like, even better than that, probably. It's like probably less than 1% of the time you're going to have any kind of trouble coming out of there.
Yeah. So, again, it's – and they talk about this, like, the previous location had suffered a fire. That's why they need a new location and essentially need to expand. The previous Pine Lodge location had been in operation for 35 years without a single incident. There has never once been a detriment to the community. So you have a 35-year track record.
Yeah.
Right? Like –
I don't know. Yeah. How can you go against that?
I guarantee you, you could take any high school football, college hockey, or men's social club or women's social club for that matter, in North America with a 35-year history, and it will not have gone 35 years without
any trouble.
Right. But if this was an issue where, you know, there's going to be the college hockey team was going to open up a practice facility in the community. Everyone would be jumping for joy and wouldn't bat an eye at, the zoning issues. And like, I'm not even speaking negatively about hockey players, right? This isn't to say, oh, like no, that's anything, right? Like
literally anything,
literally anything. You're going to run into issues. And this is people who, they have a medical issue. It's have an addictions issue with alcohol or an addictions issue with drugs. Whether recreational all along, or in some cases started off as prescribed medication and, addictions happened because of that. Like these are, again, these are medical issues that came about, and regardless of any sort of moral weight someone wants to place on how it happened in the first place, the fact of the matter is it's happened now. Yeah. There needs to be, you know, we need as a society come up with ways of healing people who have health issues. This is one that shouldn't have a negative impact. And it's disappointing to find out that the stigma and the shame that prevent healing may prevent the building from happening as well. So,
especially like for all of those people that are currently saying, well, when everybody's talking about COVID. We're ignoring the addictions and overdoses in our province. This is what, this is helping. Yeah. This is supposed to help. This would help.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yes. You lose the right to start saying those things too. And also, anytime any sort, again, any sort of oil and gas project gets delayed or canceled because of, for whatever reason, oh, the jobs and building it. Well,
what about the jobs here?
it's not going to spring from the ground fully formed. So like you're fighting against jobs in your community, both short-term and long-term, right? Because there's the short-term construction jobs of building it, but the long-term jobs of people working in the facility and like good, hopefully good paying jobs in healthcare. Like this is the type of thing we want
people,
to see.
Yeah. Like the people who work in rehabs are centers are,
amazing.
I don't know.
Yeah. Incredible humans.
Like, I'm trying to come up with the adequate description because there's not much better people that you're going to find.
And again, it, that cold-hearted capitalist perspective that I bring, again, it is good for the economy. It's good all around. Yeah. Like this should be a win-win-win story. And it's frustrating to find out that stigma is pulling away from that. But
yeah,
I think that's the, where I wanted to, those are my thoughts on that. So
sounds good.
We have the new suicide prevention funding.
Yes.
So again, speaking of mental health and healthcare, I think this is good. This is an optimistic story.
Yeah.
Even has the word optimistic in the headline. So it must be optimistic.
Not something you see too often.
No. And again, if they implement it, and I hope this isn't one of those things where they reap the benefits of the goodwill and then backdoor cancel it later, to the credit of, the Sask Party Minister Mark Miller, like this is the type of thing that during the provincial leadership debates, Scott Moe kept saying his party would do. And you and I both called him out on the fact that it's not like his party hasn't been in government and, you know, should have been doing this stuff a lot more, a lot sooner. But in that they can't change the past. And their party's own record, their support for this, I think, is important and is a good sign. I don't want to give them too much credit because this definitely sounds like it is far more driven by the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations themselves. Like FSIN seems to be the ones spearheading this, organizing it, doing most of the logistics and the hard work and the heavy lifting. And
the Sask Party just signed on.
But like good for them for signing on, right? Yes. Like I don't want to take that away from them, but I also don't want to in any way diminish the fact that this is an Indigenous led initiative. And that it is the Indigenous Saskatchewanians who have put the hard work to get it to the point we're at. And, again, hopefully it goes forward. One of the things they talk about is Vice Chief David Pratt talked about how he's optimistic, but one of the things that's really important and that hasn't been settled on yet is the funding model, because having a 5-year funding model becomes really important, because if you as soon as they go year by year, you lose out on hiring the best people from a budgeting perspective, from a recruiting perspective, from a managing attrition, like all of those things that businesses have to, and again, this isn't a business, but from all of those things that you need to look at to have a sustained enterprise that recruits strong people, that has succession planning, having a 5-year funding model is huge, because like a lot of people won't take a job if it's like won't leave a job they're in currently for a 1-year term somewhere. If you have someone who is the best in their field, they're amazing at what they do, and you know someone comes along and says, hey, we have this amazing opportunity. You're going to do great work. We would love to hire you. You would be perfect for our organization. And you say to them, but we can only guarantee you one job. That person goes, I'd love to do it. This is the type of work I want to do. But how do I say to my family, I might not have a job in a year?
Yeah.
So if you can guarantee, no, this is a full-time permanent position, because with five-year funding models, you can, well, even with a five-year funding model, you essentially can at that point make positions permanent, because you have time to secure funding at the back end.
Well, and yeah,
it's not like you hire people for a five-year term, right? So, they're hired permanently.
Once a thing like that is, solidified for 5 years, it becomes part of the, environment, right? Like then you have to justify not funding it.
Yeah. And like the funding model, usually then you can continue to like lock it in for longer periods of time, long term. And again, once someone's in the position, even worst case scenario at the end of the 5 year, well, worst case scenario, it gets canceled. Worst case scenario, if it then becomes year by year funding, you at least have people who have already been in the role who are continuing to just be extended rather than, having to be put on a 1 year sort of temporary contract. So good story. Hopefully this becomes permanent. It's one of those ones where I hope the eyes continue to stay on it. So the government continues to do the right thing. The NDP came forward with a really solid suicide prevention plan in their platform leading into the election. The Sask party really didn't have a plan, but promised they would have one. So I think it's important that they now continue to live up to their promise. And that this, again, everyone continues to keep their eyes on this to hold them accountable for making sure they do.
For sure. So the federal government is coming out with their buyback program for now banned firearms. They're not sure how much it's going to cost, I guess, which is an issue in the article, which I will put up on the screen because I haven't done that yet. So guns are a contentious issue in our province. We have a lot of American style rhetoric going on. We have a lot of hunters, a lot of farmers who use firearms on their farm. We have a lot of Trudeau hate. So this is very much a Saskatchewan kind of an issue that's, like you say, it's got a very Saskatchewan feel to it.
Yep.
But what day was this? Bill C-21 was introduced and comes 9 months after the Liberals announced a ban on the use, sale, and importation of more than 1,500 makes, models, and of military-grade assault-style weapons.
Yeah.
So there's some contention about what constitutes an assault-style weapon or a military-grade or what have you. And one of the things that I've seen around, apparently, some of the guns that are on this list, one of them is considered an airsoft gun, which is like a type of pellet gun, I guess. I'm not particularly familiar with it. Another one is actually the same name as a coffee company, the Black Rifle Coffee Company. And there were articles at the time that the list was released where where this was a big deal. Like they claim the Trudeau government has no idea what they're talking about. They're just assigning these guns to a list based on the names and the looks and what have you. But, I'm not a gun person. I don't know a lot about guns, but it appears that there's a thing called a receiver in guns. And this receiver, carries with it a serial number, and that serial number is assigned a name. So when you have these serial numbers and these receivers, cause the ban is, the receiver is the thing that shoots.
Yeah.
The framing around it, the look around it, that's a whole other thing, I guess.
Right.
So the ban is actually a ban on receivers. So these serial numbers, they line up to certain things, certain names, and a couple of them, one of them assigns to an airsoft gun as well as being traced to a gun manufacturer in the US.
Right.
And similarly with the black rifle serial number, it lines up with an actual firearm. It's not, yeah. They didn't ban coffee.
Correct.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of Trudeau, but this stuff is nonsense. Yeah. I probably explained it really badly, but there's a National Post article.
By the sound of things, I'm slightly more knowledgeable of guns, but only marginally, and only because I have some friends who are more gun people.
Yeah, there's a National Post article that kind of explains it in depth,
and like, it's in classic National Post style. The headline is
right.
completely nonsense, right? The headline is the anti-Trudeau splashy propaganda. But then later on, the second half of the article actually is good and clears up that no, they didn't ban coffee. They didn't ban an airsoft rifle. So it's almost like I don't know who Jesse Snyder is. He's not a reporter. I that instantly jumps to mind.
Right.
But it's like, No, the second half of this is actually good journalism, and it just seemed like an editor's like, no, we need to make it look bad to begin with. I guess it says appeared past tense, so it doesn't say appears, so that's good.
Right. Yeah. Appeared to prohibit – I mean, and the word appeared makes you understand that it's not actually the way it was, right?
Absolutely. But like in the – a different article about it, they go over the list of models being prohibited, like the M16, AR-10, AR-15, M4 carbine, you know, the Ruger Mini 14 rifle, and sort of goes on from there. Like, these are not, again, I'm sure someone's going to jump and tell me I'm wrong, but these are not rifles typically used for deer hunting.
Right.
So,
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, somebody's going to come in and be like, oh, no, why use that for this all the time? Yeah.
I also will point out it is a matter of Canadian law. We don't actually have a system that holds, previous court cases are set new law. But we do have a Canadian court case that the ruling, the defense of the defendant was people don't kill people, guns kill people. That guns, even according to the jury and most supporters of Gerald Stanley, like most of the people who said,
just kill you.
If you do, even if you do absolutely everything right with a gun and you haven't broken any laws and you're following all proper gun safety regulations and measures, a gun can just magically kill people, shoot someone in the back of the head while they're sleeping. Yep. Even if you've done everything right and haven't broken the law. So Canadian, like we have a court case in the Canadian justice system that ruled and supported wholeheartedly, full-throatedly by most conservatives in this province, most gun right advocates in this province, I would add, that people don't kill people, guns kill people. I have to be honest, like I will say that when it comes to the issue of guns and the Federal Liberal Party, that this is definitely feels more like optics than good law.
Yes.
I don't think it's necessarily bad law. I think,
but it is. Yeah.
I definitely think what they are doing is far more for, fulfilling a campaign province. It reads well in Ontario, it reads well in places where the Liberals are competing with the NDP for votes. It's like the abortion issue on the right? Like it's a thing that the Liberals can trot out every couple of years. The opposing side of this issue always looks incredibly stupid. Like you're going to have conservatives lose votes over the things they say about this law in the next coming months.
Right.
Like it's good politics because the conservatives are going to lose votes in places where they are close and gain support in places they were already going to win.
Yep.
Right.
Because they're going to play to the base of conservative voter, right? The pro gun crowd, the ones that have no nuance to the discussion.
And like the conservatives, like if the conservatives gain more votes in Saskatchewan, they don't actually gain any more seats because they already won them all.
Yeah, that's right.
Effectively, right? And same with Alberta. Like, I think there's a couple in Alberta that, that are not. But like, you can, becoming more popular in Saskatchewan and Alberta gets the Conservatives a grand total of diddly squat.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think, again, it's good politics on the part of the Liberals. The NDP are going to jump on in support of this, of course, because, you know, it lines up with their, you know. That said, you know, one of those lines you hear in memes, if, you know, if you go far enough left, you get your guns back. Some of the most passionate pro-gun people I know are because they are as far left as they are. Those tend to be more Americans than Canadians. But like, I think one of the things, and you and I talked about this online earlier today, how come you never hear the pro-guns crowd speak in nuance about these topics and propose changes that would make things more effective? And it's like, because those people stop being considered part of the pro-gun crowd as soon as they do. Like, an ex-partner of mine, they were a member of the Saskatchewan Wildlife Association. They're an avid hunter. They've owned guns their entire life. They're looking at getting their the license for handguns because they want to get into handgun target practice shooting and stuff.
Okay.
And like, for anything, and like, they are an avid gun aficionado. Like, when a family member, a family member out east, was sort of handing stuff off before he passed rather than leaving it in as well. They drove out to Ontario, disassembled it, transported it in like, went through all of this work to get it because it was this antique that he wanted. And like, and I say this in the most positive way, a gun nut, but is made to feel unwelcome in pro-gun circles.
Right.
Because he's bisexual. They go by both he, him, or they, them pronouns. Gender non-binary.
pronouns in profile.
So like, like, their political leaning tends to be more NDP than Conservative. And just, they show up also at these things like, if I'm my true self around these people, they won't want me here. I could be a passionate advocate for gun rights, but they don't want me here. They don't want me to be a passionate advocate for gun rights because I'm a dirty queer. Right? And there's too much overlap with some of these other issues. And I think, if there were issues with this list, you know, out of that 1500 weapon list, my guess is there probably are a couple on there that probably shouldn't be. This is a preliminary list.
Sure.
There may be reasons for why stuff was on there that shouldn't be. There's probably some that should be on there that aren't.
There's bound to be the odd mistake, right?
I would much rather, get, people on board with, working to get the law actually functioning. Again, the ban doesn't cover handguns. I think there's a handgun issue in major urban centers that doesn't get talked about enough because we talk about the scary looking ones. And this is another one of those weird issues where in Canada, we're so close to the United States. We compare ourselves to them and think, you know, we don't have guns here. Guns aren't an issue in Canada. Gun deaths aren't a problem. No. Compared to everywhere else in the world, we are certainly amongst one of the most heavily armed civilian populations in the world when you don't look at the United States, especially amongst high income nations. There's a couple exceptions. But we're definitely up there, and we have a lot of guns in this country. Most of them are used responsibly. I don't have a problem with hunting. Honestly, I think anyone who's not a vegetarian probably should go hunting at some point in their life. I think it's important to understand what meat is.
I think it is actually in a real sense, more ethical to hunt and use the meat from what you kill than it is to buy mass produced meat from a factory farm.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah. So I'm not anti-gun. I'm anti-stupidity with guns.
Yeah.
And I don't think guns kill people. I think people do kill people with guns. I think we do need to be very cognizant of if someone is being unsafe with a gun and issues come about because of that, they need to be held responsible for it. I think we need to have strict laws about what happens when guns leave the legally owned gun system and enter an illegally owned gun network. That I think that transition point doesn't get enough focus.
Yeah.
That transition from when a gun is a legally owned gun to when it becomes an illegally owned gun. How does it get from one to the other? Some of that is theft. What are we doing about that? Some of it is not theft though, and there are gray areas there that we need to make not a little less gray. But again,
I think it's fair to say that overall, it's actually a fairly complicated issue.
And like in Canada, the deadliest terrorist attacks in Canadian history have been with guns.
Yeah.
And I still can't have shampoo on an airplane. So like because of terrorism. So I think we can understand like the idea of restricting civil liberties in order for public safety is always going to be contentious. There's always going to be a balance there. You always need to weigh things on either side. And I think guns should fall into that. Guns should be treated as equally dangerous as shampoo. And I'm being a little facetious because in Canada, we do have, we do already have regulations on guns, but the idea of where we draw those lines, I think needs to be a more nuanced conversation.
There's a very good podcast called 13 Hours about the Nova Scotia shooter, Gabriel Wortmann. And he actually was a person who wasn't supposed to have guns, but he had them anyway. And there's a lot of detail and nuance and like, how did he get them? Why did he have them? Who was getting him the ammunition? Where did he get that from? Like, this is all stuff that, like you say, it's that transition from a legal gun to an illegal gun. What's happening there? It's a super open area. Like, there's not a lot of focus there.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And I think there needs to be some culpability there. Again, we started talking about carceral justice systems and over policing by the state and things like that. But from a responsibility standpoint, someone who gives or sells their gun illegally to someone and that gun is then used in a crime, I think that person who gave a violent criminal a gun and that violent criminal then killed someone with said gun, that guy who gave the gun should probably face at least as much consequences as someone who does drugs in their living room.
At least.
Right?
Yeah, I would think at least.
But we don't, right?
Like that, right, that, no.
That's not typically how that goes. Like, again, selling guns is illegal, but illegally. but that doesn't get enforced, right? Because it's, can we prove? Oh, was it maybe it was stolen?
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the job for investigators to look, find out, stuff like that. So. I think that's it. There's a GoFundMe for helping to support Saskatchewan inmates. I'll provide a link in the show notes if you want to donate to Inmates for Humane Conditions. Is raising money to help Saskatchewan inmates get through COVID-19. Actually, I'll throw that up on the screen just for a moment. If people want to look up this, I'll put a link in the show notes. You can help the fight for more humane prisons in Saskatchewan. Yep. All right. So you can find us in various places. anchor.fm/from many people. You can find us on Twitter at SK Politics Pod. Our Facebook is facebook.com/frommanypeoplesstrengthpod. And you can email us at frommanypeoples@gmail.com, or you could just wait till I post this on Reddit and argue with us there.
Yeah, well, we had engagement. Engagement is good.
Yeah.
That's a positive.
I'm not really a person who reacts well when somebody says, "Oh my God, can you point to where this issue is in this incredibly boring podcast?"
Yeah. I think if someone said, "Hey, I want to listen to when you talk about this specific issue, can you point it out?" But like,
yep.
Don't insult something. And I'm going to be honest. Like, if it's not your cup of tea, don't listen, don't watch. Like, I don't listen to podcasts. I'm going to be blunt. I would not listen to this podcast. I find everything that you say very interesting. I would not listen to this podcast because I don't listen to podcasts. Right, I find podcasts in general. I would much rather read something. Right. You know, recently I was discussing something online and I was like, "Oh, watch this 18-minute long YouTube video that explains things." And for once I did, I never actually do. And this was someone on the left, not someone on the right. And I was like, I watched the video they posted. It's like, yes, this was like poli-sci 100 stuff. Like 98% of this is stuff I knew. Most of it I could have read on Wikipedia in about 3 minutes. No, right. All of this was stuff I could have read on Wikipedia in three minutes. Right? Read it. I don't want to watch stuff. I don't want to listen to stuff. So podcasts aren't my jam. But then, like, feel free not to listen. I don't know.
It is a free country.
Well, and someone's like, "Oh, sounds like it's just a pair of dads sitting around talking about politics." Like, yep. Well, that's because it's a pair of dads sitting around talking about politics. I think it's weird that people want to listen to us, to be honest, but I'm kind of glad they do. It's kind of neat. It's a thing I look forward to being able to talk about stuff. But
the thing that I have learned, and that I have thought, I thought this before, was like Saskatchewan gets overlooked, right?
Yeah.
In almost every way.
Yes.
And the reason, part of the reason for that is because we're such a one-sided spot. Like, nobody is getting any media out of Saskatchewan that isn't conservative. And there's more conservative people out there that they'll listen to. There's, you know, when I listen to media criticism, nobody's saying, "Well, the media in Saskatchewan is so terrible."
Well, as we talk about, like, John Gormley's show is on for what? However many hours a day, every day. Like, I think when you count the repeat play broadcast, it's probably well over 40 hours a week, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
Just John Gormley. So even just initial, like, I don't know, he's on for what, 4 or 5 hours a day? Every day. So, like, that's still 20 to 25 hours of just –
the one
conservative viewpoint, right? Our hour and 20 minutes is our hour and 20 minutes that's listened to by a few dozen people. And I'm thrilled for every single one who listens.
Call it propaganda all you want.
It's a pretty small counterbalance. All right. You've already put up the things you always put up at the end of the show. So I guess we will just fade to black here. Thank you once again for all the work you do in organizing stuff and engaging with people on the interwebs and social media and having all of that in place. So
my block list is growing every day.
I'm glad this podcast has enabled you to expand that. All right. Take care and I'll speak with you next week.
You bet.